When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Sadly, this is what home sounds like for many of America's heroes. During this crisis, many veterans are living on the street, sleeping on nothing more than cardboard. You can help. Donate at cardboardtoheadboard.org.
Happy New Year, Fangirl Nation. You are listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job podcast. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and today I am so excited to be joined by Katie O'Reilly, Chief Revenue Officer for the Philadelphia 76ers. Katie shares the importance of being open to opportunities, having the confidence to know you don't know everything, and being present where you are. She also talks about the innovative mindset of the 76ers and how that mindset has changed the game. And Katie went to the University of Michigan, so I was thrilled. You're going to love this episode, so let's get to it. Katie, thank you so much for joining me for the first Get My Job podcast of 2021.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a great way for us to start the new year. And I just want to jump right in. You've had such an interesting and exciting career and a career in something that's so much a part of what so many of us are doing right now that I'm very excited to talk to you about it. So if you could just start kind of by taking us through your professional journey that brought you to the 76ers and now to your current position as the Chief Revenue Officer.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So I should start with that I am from Philadelphia, grew up in Philly, diehard 4-for-4 sports fan, went to college out in Michigan, graduated college as one of those people who was like, oh, I want to do sports marketing and had absolutely no idea what that meant.
I actually have to interrupt you because I forgot you went to the University of Michigan and I too went to the University of Michigan.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, and I saw that yesterday and I was very excited. So I'm glad you brought it up. Go Blue.
The best. Go Blue. I mean, we biggest living alumni base. Like, we are just everywhere.
That's amazing. You can't escape us.
I love it. I love it. Well, huge. We could talk about this forever. I won't digress. But it's so funny. Like, it is such a huge part. I always like to start and tell people that because it is a huge part of my career path. You know, I graduated kind of thinking that I wanted to go into sports, having no idea what that meant, and leverage the Michigan Alumni Network, which is something I always tell people. It's like, utilize your resources, utilize your network. And I was introduced to a ton of people in sports marketing through the Alumni Association. One happened to be in New York and put me in touch with folks at the Garden. And that sort of, you know, catapulted my career from there. I literally accepted a seasonal, making no money in Manhattan, group sales, selling group tickets job at Madison Square Garden. You know, one of those jobs that my parents were like, you're crazy. What are you doing? You're moving to Manhattan and making no money. And I was like, yes, it's going to be my foot in the door. And it was great. You know, like, you learn a ton. And from there was introduced to folks who then introduced me to my current boss, Chris Heck. He's now the president of the Philadelphia 76ers. At the time, he and Scott O'Neill, who's the CEO of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment and the 76ers, they were at the NBA. And so I met Chris Heck. I moved over to the NBA and was in team marketing and business operations for a number of years. Working at the NBA is amazing. I always joke, you know, that working at the NBA is like basically like getting your MBA, and I'll never do it because you learn so much about the business. Mm-hmm. You see how it all works from soup to nuts. It was a phenomenal experience. And I also obviously met the folks who became sort of my career mentors and people I stayed in touch with in Chris and in Scott. We all did go our separate ways after spending time together at the NBA. From there, I actually went over to IMG. At the time, they were just starting their college business. So IMG College, they had just purchased the marketing and multimedia rights to about 90 plus university athletic departments and conferences. And we were leveraging that as a national platform for the first time. So worked with a small team based in New York, selling national college marketing partnerships. Awesome experience. You know, I think when you're at the NBA and in Teambo, which I was, which is essentially this internal consultant group, after I'm consulting with my 10 teams on sponsorships and marketing. And I was like, you know, I kind of want to go do it myself, be on the front lines myself. Mm-hmm. And so went and did that. And then from there, actually went to more of a startup under the RSC Ventures umbrella, worked at an agency at the time, which was called Insignia Sports and Entertainment. They were essentially trying to really create the next IMG. They still exist. They're now called Ascendant. Really cool opportunity to really, you know, see it from a more startup perspective. I will say that I remember my phone calls to Scott O'Neill and Chris Heck when I was thinking about taking this job, and they were both like, it sounds great, like, do it, go for it. And then lo and behold, a very short time later, they were the ones who called me back and said, hey, remember that job we just told you to took? And you did it. We just took over the Sixers and we want you to come with us. It's like, okay. So I had a quick stint at this startup agency. Because when your sort of career mentors call you and tell you they just took over your hometown team and they want you to come, it's not really something you think twice about.
No, definitely not.
Exactly. So did that, made the move to Philly. 8 years later, here I am and have gone through probably every job you can imagine at the Sixers. I started in business development, selling, moved over and ran marketing for about 4 to 5 years and am now overseeing the revenue side. So it's been an adventure. It's been really fun.
That's amazing. That's a great, great story. And I'm just so happy that it started at the University of Michigan, but it's a fantastic story. And so I want to back up a little bit and talk about your marketing days, because I think in today's world, as I mentioned briefly at the very beginning, social media marketing is so much like what all of us are doing. And so I want to start that. And you were very innovative and created a number of innovative initiatives. Is that something you were just always born with? Was it something you learned along the way, or where does that mindset come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think it's definitely in our DNA at the 76ers. You know, we like to do things differently. We like to be first. We like to, you know, sort of make a big splash. It's what we like to do. We like to push the boundaries. You know, when I remember literally in my first couple months on the job with the organization, and my job was to, you know, secure large scale partners. You know, our philosophy really was like, we'll do anything as long as it's legal. Like, if you can sign this off with our legal team, like, we are game to do it. We like to push the boundaries. We like to have fun. We really take the why not approach to everything that we do. And we love finding like-minded partners to make it happen. So it's definitely, I think, something that we pride ourselves on at the 76ers. You can see it in a number of things we've done, both on the marketing and the business side, whether it's we literally launched the first in-house and team-operated innovation lab, and we were the first team to sign a jersey patch partner. And then you saw on the marketing side all the cool stuff we did, from, you know, the art exhibition to, I mean, you name it, like jersey launches. It's just who we are. It is who we are as a brand. It is who we are as an organization, you know, both externally, how we represent ourselves, and then internally, how we train and grow our people. And I think it's been, you know, especially important just in a marketplace and in a world where, you know, entertainment discretionary dollars are are just so, so competitive right now. And the space is so cluttered, like to stand out, how do you make an impact? How do you stand out from the clutter? It's doing things differently. And we really prided ourselves on doing that.
So you mentioned the Sixers Innovation Lab. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that, how it came about, and you know, what you guys are doing?
Of course. This is one of my favorite stories to tell. Just, I think it really encapsulates everything about, you know, who we are and what we do. It started literally as one of my jobs. We were building our training complex. So at the time, our team literally practiced at like a college, and we're like tying their sneakers in a hallway with college students stepping over them. Like, you can't make this up. So it was like, it was a really different world. We were building a brand new training complex. We were so excited. So I was charged with, hey, every vendor, everyone that comes in the door to build this building, let's have a conversation with them. And how can we partner and leverage our brand to grow theirs? That's what we do. We like to find like-minded partners and together make a splash together. And so literally, I was having conversations with furniture companies, like office furniture, literally like the desks and the chairs. And we happened to have this 10,000 square foot space on the first floor of our complex that at the time we still didn't know what to do with. It was still remnant space. And we were determining what was going to go in there. And so I'm having these conversations with furniture partners and I'm like, you know, come on board with us. You can use it as a space to like a showroom, display your furniture, things like that, which like, you know, I'm coming up with these ideas. I think they're pretty cool ideas. And where we ended up is just like mind blowing how much more innovative and how much more it did push the boundary. We just clicked with this furniture company, Kimball Office, and they were like, so yeah, that's a great idea, but you know what would be an even better idea? They were like, look, we understand that the future is changing, that distributed offices and environments and workplaces are the way of the future, which is amazing to think about just where we are today. I don't think any of us could have foreseen this and everybody working from home.
It's true.
But you know, they said, we don't necessarily think we need a showroom. We want to come up with like a mobile option and be like incubators and be a part of this bigger incubation. I mean, truly like the conversations we were having, it made no sense for a basketball team and a furniture company to be having these conversations, but we were so like-minded on this. Scott O'Neill, Chris Heck, and myself, I'll never forget, we got on a plane and flew out to Jasper, Indiana, literally landed in the middle of a cornfield to the headquarters of this furniture company, and had probably one of the most invigorating meetings that I've ever been a part of. And literally the idea of the Innovation Lab was born. So essentially it started as an in-house, really like an incubator run by the team. Of course, once we really kicked this off, we brought in Seth Berger as the managing director of our Innovation Lab. Seth was a Wharton grad and the founder of N1. So he was perfect, had you know, launched and exited his own startup. And now we're probably like 10 to 12 companies through our cycle that we have brought into our lab and grown and see through. It's amazing. So I think it's the Innovation Lab to me is a perfect representation of our brand, of what we're willing to do, of the boundaries that we're willing to push, especially when we have a like-minded partner who's, you know, beside us to help us do it all. There's a lot of, you know, labs and incubators you see out there with sports teams tied to them, but they really are, you know, lending their brand, which is an amazing way to do it. But we were the first to do it in-house, which is something that we're really proud of.
And the jersey patch partner, I think, is something great because I loved, like, last season with the Clippers, you know, sponsored by Bumble. But I think that's fantastic. Kind of who thought of that and who came up with that idea?
Yeah. So this, we're always the league, you know, the league, the NBA, they too are probably one of the most innovative leagues. They're at the forefront of everything. We are always looking and evaluating new inventory and new ways for teams, you know, to bring their brands and their partners' brands to life. We're going through the same thing right now. You know, we've had to, obviously, with the pandemic and then seeing our season move to a bubble and now starting again with no fans, like this has been a true test of our innovation and what we can do both for our own brand and for our partners. So the league is always pushing the boundaries there and opening up new opportunities and ways for us to do that and to activate our brand and our partners and to drive more revenue. So it was no surprise that they were the first to open up the patch opportunity, which we were super excited about. And we were the first team in the NBA to announce our partnership with StubHub, who is still our jersey patch partner for another season. And, you know, the cool thing about our jersey patch partnership with StubHub is that not only do you see their patch on our uniform, but we changed the entire ticketing landscape together. Again, another example of these innovative deals mm-hmm. that we love to do. We essentially took the primary market and the secondary market and blended them. And we said, there's no difference. You know, if you're a fan mm-hmm. and you're a user, you know, like when you look for tickets for something, you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the team website and then I'm going to go to StubHub and then I'm going to go here and I'm going to see where I can get the best prices. We said, no, enough of that. We're going to work together and make this a seamless, easy experience for all of our fans and our customers and make it a one-stop shop. And it's been an incredible partnership and one that we've loved to see through. Another great example of how we do things at the organization.
And really a genius idea. Makes so much sense. I mean, really, it's fantastic. So kudos for being the first on that, because that is incredible. So I want to talk a little bit about the world of social media. It is a world yes. we are all navigating all the time. Mm-hmm. I would say most of the time, I actually think it's great. Some of the time, it's not. but as we see constantly. So you did an excellent job with the Sixers social media when you were working in marketing, and obviously have a tremendous follower count. You do incredible content. How do you navigate that line, though, between fun, engaging content and not crossing any lines? And then I would say, what advice do you have for social media directors in that area? Because sometimes we see teams do things that are really funny. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we see teams do things that you could see were meant to be funny, but are bordering on mean. And I think it is a very important line. So I just kind of love to get your feelings on all that.
Absolutely. You know, I'll say a few things. I appreciate your comments and your compliments. I can take zero credit. One of my mantras in the things I do is I hire really great people and I let them do their thing.
It's a great and important
it is. I did not pretend. You know, we have an amazing, amazing, amazing head of content, incredible head of social media. They know the space and we give them the freedom. And I think it's even that much more interesting, I think, for an NBA team, especially the NBA more so than any league. Like, we are a league of superstars. We are superstar driven. Our players are incredibly exposed on the court. They are recognizable. They're global celebrities. You know, they don't wear helmets. They don't wear pads. And these guys really cross into fashion, art, culture. They are celebrities and we are a league of superstars, and we have successfully, I think, capitalized on that. The Sixers being no different. We have definitely some of our own in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris and you name it. We have a ton of stars. I think
Joel Embiid fan here, by the way.
Who's not? And by the way, talk about social media. Oh my gosh, he's, mm-hmm. he's the best follow. If anyone is listening to this and does not follow him, you should, and the Sixers, of course.
Obviously.
But it is. It's a really fine line. I think, you know, we have a mantra at the organization that we use for everything, which is no one is bigger than the brand. You know, it's not about an individual. It's not about one department or one initiative. It's always about the brand of the 76ers and the integrity and what we stand for first and foremost. And so I think with that as our North Star, we have been able to be very successful in everything we do. And it speaks to social media as well, because it provides those checks and balances. We know who we are. We know what our brand represents. We know our voice. We know our tone. We know what we would do and what we wouldn't do. And we've really set up our infrastructure to have these checks and balances that are cross-departmental. So someone in ticket sales probably can't do anything without talking to someone in marketing, or someone in content run something by PR. You know, and it's not necessarily to be a handcuff, but it's to keep everyone in check and to protect each other and to protect our brand. And I think by knowing who we are and having the brand team really drive and build, you know, hey, here's what we sound like when we speak. And here's what the 76ers represent. And here are our values, makes it then really easy to know sort of what's in line and what's out. And that's, I think, first and foremost, it's knowing who you are and what you represent and who you want to be. And we have a really hard job, you know, the social media team. It's, on the one hand, you are a media member and you're trying to share stories. And on the other, we are representing the players and the team, and we want to do so in the best light, and make them, of course, you know, I always say, or I always did say when I was running marketing, like our, you know, to our players, like your job is to be the best basketball players in the world on the court that you can be. And my job is to make the city of Philadelphia and our fans all over the world fall in love with you. So let's use all of our assets to do that. And social media is obviously the biggest one. And I think that's really the way to be successful is knowing who you are and what you would say.
Well, there are two things I want to unpack there. What you just said, I think, is so true for a team, a person, anybody that's starting to create a brand. When you create your social media, know who you are and be true to that and be authentic to that, because it doesn't work otherwise. You can't be someone else. You can't try to do something because it seems like the right thing to do. So I think the knowing who you are is so important. And then something you said at the beginning of this discussion was that you hire great people and let them do their thing. So as a manager, I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because I think it's very hard for us. And I know for me, like with Fangirl, this is my baby. And so I know sometimes I have a hard time just letting go and letting the people who are supposed to do their thing just do their things. But it is such an important part of being a manager. So if you could talk a little bit about that, please.
Absolutely. I say this all the time to my team and people I mean, I think the hardest transition anyone makes in their career is that first role where you go from sort of being the doer to being the manager, and making that transition and being comfortable with delegating. But once you do break through that barrier and realize how much more effective and efficient you can be, and applying sort of your mind to more strategy. And look, I'm also speaking from a very, you know, the craziest thing about sports and these teams is that we're these massive global brands, but like what no one realizes is that we're actually like tiny businesses. So we are slim teams. When I say like roll up your sleeves, like everyone at our organization, CEO down, you know, it's funny. We were joking about it. I was at our game on Monday night, which was a whole crazy experience. It was my first game in the sort of no fans COVID era. And we were joking because, you know, you're really locked into where you can go. There's like crazy rules and guidelines and regulations, of course, as there should be. But we looked down and I was sitting, you know, 8 feet away from my boss, which is the closest you can get to anyone. And you're wearing a mask, so it's very hard to have an average conversation. And there's a basketball game going on in front of you. But on the dashers, because there were so few people, there was literally a cup of coffee like sitting on the top of the dasher. And I was like, Chris, like someone has to move that. It's going to spill. What if then it goes onto the floor? But we can't move. You know what I mean? And we're not allowed to get close to the court. So literally like our CEO was walking by and we're like, Sky, you got to pick up the coffee. So literally in sports, whether you're the CEO or you are a like first year seller, everyone is rolling up their sleeves and picking up the cup of coffee and throwing it away if they see it. And that is actually a very important sort of, I think, company value that we have. You know, everyone does their part. But it's true. I think, you know, as a manager, like allowing yourself to have the freedom and to delegate is huge. And it's so important. And I think having the confidence to know that you don't know everything and you want to hire experts around you. You know, my team on the marketing side, I'm really just a couple months in on the new job, but on the marketing side, we really built that team from scratch. And my head of content, my head of brand and creative, like I purposely hired people who were experts at what they do and from outside of sports, because I knew that they would help make us better and that they would push the boundary. And I think that's really, really important, is hiring smart people who are experts and let them do what they do best, but set up the system and the structure and the processes to allow them to be successful and to have those checks and balances and to have the conversation with the other people in other departments. And obviously myself, you know, before they do anything, but it's been a recipe for success for us for sure.
Well, and I think, again, you said a couple things. It's funny, when in my previous life, I worked in politics. I worked for the mayor of DC. And when I got my first cabinet position was running the Office of Boards and Commissions. And we had a staff, there were four of us, including me. And my predecessor said to me, and I was used to, before that, I was like a special assistant to the mayor and you were working 24/7, which you kind of always do in politics anyways. But she said to me, if you're at the office at 8 o'clock at night, you're not delegating enough.
100%.
She was like, you should be able to, she's like, it doesn't mean you're turning off your phone and not paying attention or whatever, but like, you should be able to leave at 6 or 6:30 and know you put in a full day. And so I thought that was like very, I thought that was very good advice.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's this, you know, and I think especially, you know, well, first and foremost, you know, your previous life in politics, you should know, I think if I wasn't in sports, that's 100% what I would be doing. I'm a total junkie.
Love it. Love it. But, kindred spirits, Michigan. Yeah, 100%.
Great. You know, I think especially as a woman in sports, people feel the need to like work harder and prove that they're worth and that they should be there. And a lot of the way people do that is by committing more time, you know? And that's mm-hmm. not the case at all, to your point. Like, no, if you're doing your job well, you are efficient. You like, it's not about time checking, you know, and in sports, it's crazy. We have 50 plus games a year at our arena and nights that we have to be there. And, you know, I always say this, like in sports, we work basically the hours of doctors, but we're not saving lives. I mean, truly. So mm-hmm. it's like, we have to understand, you know, how to manage our time and how to delegate, or else it will just take over. So I love that. I think that's like incredible, incredible advice to receive.
Yeah, it was. It was good advice. And it's, you know, definitely in what I'm doing now, it's more difficult because, you know, to your point, there's a small team and all that, but there are times where I really do try. And, you know, even last week between Christmas and New Year's, I also cover the 49ers. I'm a beat writer. So it's like two mm-hmm. pretty, you know, time consuming positions.
Yes.
But, you know, last week between Christmas and New Year's, obviously I had my beat writer responsibilities, which I wouldn't change for anything. But I like, this wasn't easy for me. But I said, we're not doing podcasts next week. I'm taking that time off.
Good and for you.
And it was hard, but it was the right thing to do because like everybody needs a little break. And to your point, like we're not saving lives. No one will die without listening to the podcast. They're great. And I hope everybody subscribes and loves them, but it was okay to take yes. that week and say, no, we're not doing it this week. And yeah. I'm going
to
take.
No. And look, you're lucky that you get to make that decision. I think that like yes. for other, you know, younger people coming up, it's like that. That's why for me, you know, who you work for, where you work, the organization, mm-hmm. the values, what they stand for is so important, you know, at Hair Splitzer Sports and all the way from our managing partners, Josh and David, down to our CEO, everyone, you know, at each team and each culture, like that is encouraged. Like, you know, the idea, which frankly, I actually think doesn't exist, but the idea of work-life balance, like it is encouraged to, you know, we're not like checking time cards here. Like you do your job, you do it to the highest level. We all like kick butt and then like, take the time you need. Work hard, play hard.
And it's when I worked for the mayor, I mean, I was always available. He's the mayor. And there was a city to run on a daily basis.
Yes.
But if I ever said I couldn't do something, he knew I really couldn't.
Right.
You know, because and that's the other thing too, is you are starting out in your career. You want to set boundaries, but you also want to work hard, you know, and advance as you want to advance. But I think if you're available and diligent and a good worker and you're saying yes most of the time, people will respect it if you say no.
100%.
If you're constantly saying no, then that's a different story 100%. Altogether.
Absolutely.
But I think that's important. And that was another place where I learned, to your point on the cup of coffee story, like the no one's bigger than the brand is so important. And I think mm-hmm. it's such an important thing for all of us in our jobs. And so I think that I really like that. That's the mantra.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're going to turn me into like a full on 76ers fan.
I hope so. That's my job, right?
Yeah, that's your job. It's really your job. Please don't tell the Lakers because I grew up on them. However, you're fully going to turn me into a 76ers fan. You can get, they can be my Eastern Conference team. That's
great. We'll take it.
That'll be the direction we'll go. You just brought up work-life balance. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Sure. And talk a little bit how you prioritize your home life and your work life. And I do agree with you. I don't think balance is really the right word. And I struggle to find another one because that word seems obsolete. So I would mm-hmm. say, how do you prioritize and how do you allow those priorities to change as needed?
Sure. Yeah, it's true. I think we throw around that term so easily all the time. Work-life balance. Like we want you to have work-life balance. Like you know, ultimately I don't think it exists. I think it shouldn't be about, you know, having balance. It should be about being present where you are, mm-hmm. you know? And I think, whether it's, and it's about prioritizing and know sort of what day and what week and what month, what things are most important. For me, if it's the first week of the playoffs, I'm probably going to spend a lot of time at work or at the arena, or that's going to be my priority that mm-hmm. week. But then the next week or the next month, I'll be able to say, okay, you know what? Now I'm going to like shut down for 3 days and spend it at home. Or if, you know, one morning I'm going to spend the morning with my sons, and then because I know I have a game that night, like I think it's just about prioritizing and being present where you are. You know, one of the rules my husband and I had last year, which I think we got a little bad about, and we just talked about it as part of our New Year's resolutions. It's like when we get, you know, we know like the workday doesn't end at 6 for anybody really, but when I come home and I get home at 6 o'clock, can I just like put down my phone and ignore it for 2 hours and be focused at home until I put my kids to bed? And then when they're asleep, then I can go back online. But again, we're not saving lives. Nothing is urgent. And so I think it's, again, maintaining, you know, being true to yourself and who you are, and knowing that you just being focused on where you are when you're there, and knowing that some weeks it might be more about work, or some weeks it might be more about home, or some weeks it more be about something else, and that's okay. And hopefully you just hope that in the end it all evens out. But there probably won't be a perfect balance in any day or any week or any month. So, you know, don't expect the balance, but mm-hmm. know what's most important.
I like the idea of being present where you are.
Yes.
I think that's a really, really good way to think about it, because then when you're at work, you can be very present and focused at work as you need to be. And it will make it easier for you to be present at home.
Yep.
Like if you do that, which, and vice versa.
I think. And it's something that I say, but I am definitely continuing to work on and do my,
as, you know, as we all
try my hardest. Yes.
And we are all a work in progress. I think that also brings up a point, for everybody, whether it be a young woman wanting to work in sports, a young man wanting to work in sports, you know, everyone is doing the best we can. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay mm-hmm. to mess up. That's where you're going to learn. And it's okay not to be perfect all the time. And like your failures, now I sound like Tony Robbins, but your failures are where you're going to grow the most.
100. I say this all the time, you know, to people or like to young people wanting to break into sports. I'm like, it's wonderful if you know or think that you want to be the GM of a team in 20 years. That's great. But like, it's okay to not know that. And sometimes when you have that laser focus on one thing, you close your mind to other opportunities that might come your way. So I think mm-hmm. being open-minded, you know, through your career is really important, because you learn just as much from a job what you don't like as mm-hmm. what you do like. And I think that's actually really important to find out maybe what you don't like, or have that one boss that wasn't the greatest, or, you know, the one colleague that was really hard to work with, because then you learn what you want to be. So, you know, not to take the negative side of it, but
no, it's 100%. It's important. But yeah. I think that is important, because if you're completely laser focused and decide you want to be a GM in 20 years, and you never stop to think about, is that really what you like? You may not like being a GM. I mean,
right?
what it sounds like is not actually what it is.
Yeah,
you know,
and 100%.
I was
and I go back to like my graduating from college, like, oh, I want to do sports marketing. If I actually uh-huh. stuck to that and to what I thought that would mean, I probably wouldn't be where I am today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about where you are today, about being the chief revenue officer. How has your job changed, and what have you found the most challenging so far?
Great question. How has my job changed? Well, it's changed a lot. So I went from, you know, overseeing the brand, the social media, the like CR and youth and blah, 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 to now it's really ticket sales, ticket retention, all of our account management, sponsorship sales, sponsorship activation, and our partnership solutions department. So it's really the other half of the business. So in terms of the day-to-day, it's changed in terms of, you know, what I'm focused on, what's most important, and who I'm working directly with. I think where it hasn't changed is that, going back to the beginning and what I said before, like the belief and our mantra that no one is bigger than the brand makes us, having been collaborative, you know, the whole time since I've been with the organization from the beginning. So I take the approach, as does our president, Chris and Scott, like everyone sells and everyone's marketing. Everyone is selling our brand and representing our brand. We are all doing the same thing, working towards the same goal. And I think now it's just taking sort of that perspective from the marketing side and moving it over to the revenue side. And I did start on the revenue side. You know, I started at the organization in business development, and bringing in large scale deals. So I think, you know, this in a way does come full circle for me, but having the different vantage points, having, you know, started selling, oversaw activation for a little bit, then the marketing side, like it will enable me to be that much better at the job overseeing tickets and sponsorships, because I understand how important everyone from marketing and CR and PR is to make us successful on the revenue side. And I think maybe, you know, a lot of people look at a career in sports and they think of it as very linear. You know, you start in tickets, you RP up in tickets, great. I've probably done the opposite, but I think, you know, the ability to be nimble and, you know, have a more dynamic skill set actually allows us to be better. And we do this a lot at the organization. Like, we are definitely of the mindset that you take sort of the rock stars and the talent, and you maybe like throw them in the deep end in a completely different department. We do this a lot. But it actually, it's the same reason why I hire people outside sports. It drives us to be better. And it's great. And I think especially, you know, in the sports world, we are changing. Traditionally, a lot of the teams you would see, you know, the sales side and the marketing side, and they're very siloed and they don't really talk to each other. I think that's changing. Like, we have to be better. We have to be more innovative. And to do so, there are a lot more roles now that you see at teams that sort of had one foot in sales and one foot in marketing, and are very solutions oriented. And I think, you know, we'll hopefully see more of that over time versus just the, okay, I'm going to be in sales, or okay, I'm going to be in marketing. Because at the end of the day, we're all working towards the same goal.
Have you found that there was a particular challenge you faced in your career?
A particular challenge I faced? You know, I honestly think the biggest challenge is finding that, you know, again, I'm going to go back to saying balance, because to your point, there's no other word, but that's not what it is. Maybe the word is harmony. I don't know. Like, knowing that, like, it's harmony. It's not going to be a perfect balance. I think I could answer it a couple ways. Like, again, for me, that will, you know, always be the challenge, is finding what that perfect harmony is and being okay with it not being, you know, an equilibrium every week. Especially being in a career where it's a lot of nights and it's a lot of weekends, and I have, you know, two boys under 2.5. So I want to be there for them and with them. And then I think, you know, more sort of tactically on the career side is what I was saying before. I think the hardest, you know, challenge is going from, you know, like, I'm a total OCD control freak, you know, like, I'd rather just like do it all myself. And is that breakthrough of almost delegation and of growing other people and growing managers. It's a really hard challenge to overcome, but once you do, I think it's really freeing, and it's amazing new experience to see what growing other talent does and gives you, and how it fuels you versus just doing the job yourself.
I want to talk a little bit. You've received numerous awards throughout your career, including a regional Emmy and being named a cult brand by The Gathering, which is making a lot of sense when we talk about the 76ers brand and the priorities. But what does it mean to be recognized in that way?
Oh, it's amazing. It's really wonderful to, you know, see, reap the rewards of our hard work and see it come to life. I think especially, you know, for me personally and professionally, being from Philadelphia, being so passionate about this team and this brand, we walked into a situation when I started 8 years ago that, you know, in a city of four professional sports teams, we were 4 out of 4. The brand was pretty dormant, and it had this incredible history, and it was like really, you know, disappointing to see. And we had our work cut out for us to bring us back to life, and to be a part of really this renaissance and this incredible experience from the ground up. You know, I started essentially along with a core group of us of year one of the process that we call it. And to see, you know, I think the ultimate reward would be, let's go win a world championship. I think we'd all be really happy with that. Just short of that, though, would be being recognized for the hard work we've done. I think probably the ones I'm most proud of are being named a cult brand. That was really special. And then I think this year we recently won Team of the Year from the Clio's. And that was really amazing just to see us being recognized for our hard work. I mean, we're having fun and we're staying authentic and true to ourselves and just doing what we like to do. But it's always nice when someone else tells you you did a good job and that your strategy is working.
Yeah, fair.
But
that is very fair. Well, before we get to five fun facts, I am wondering if you could take us through a day in the life of Katie O'Reilly. It can be a game day. It could be not a game day. I'll give it to you, your choice, but would love to hear a little bit about a day in the life.
Sure. I'm sure a game day is a little bit more exciting, although it's funny, the game days now are so different. A day in my life these days is trying to get up really early to get a lot done before my kids wake up, including exercise, but them always deciding to wake up even earlier and not allowing me to do any of the stuff I wanted to do, which I think just goes back to like, it's all a learning process. Like nothing is perfect. But I'll spend, you know, I try to spend the mornings at home, whether it's a game day or a non-game day, like focused on the family, getting everyone breakfast and fed. And then I sort of switch gears. I used to obviously drive to the office. Now I've recently just been walking down the hall, which has come with its own beauty and challenges. It's wonderful to be able to, you know, pop in and out when I'm getting water and see my boys, but it also makes it hard to be on a call and hear screaming in the background. But I think it also is allowing us more flexibility. So, you know, on a game day, it's working from home and being on 11 different Zooms and getting ready and prepping for the game. And do we have clients? Do we have celebrities? Do we have guests? You know, who's ringing the bell that night, which is one of our traditions that we do before every game. And then usually on a game day around 3 o'clock, we drive over to the arena, and, you know, do walkthroughs and do preps and make sure everything's ready. And if we have clients and customers there, try to get some dinner in before tip. and usually on a game day, since I probably didn't wake up early enough to exercise before the day, you try to squeeze in a workout between 3 and 5, before the game. And then it's always funny because people are like, "Ooh, you guys go to every game. What do you do at the games?" I'm like, honestly, like I'm usually just like sitting and watching, because especially in my old world of marketing, you know, we want to see how it's coming to life. If we have, you know, sponsors or if there are season ticket members there, that there's always at least, you know, like a handful of people that you want to visit and stop by and say hi to. But a lot of it also is just about seeing the experience and what it's like from the vantage point from our fans, because at the end of the day, it's all about our fans. And hopefully the tip is not too late, that you don't get home too late. But a lot of these game nights are then wrapping at, you know, pulling home at 10, 11. I will say I went to the game this week and it was a different experience leaving an arena with no fans versus leaving an arena with 20,000 fans. Not as much traffic. I got home a lot faster, which was really nice.
Yeah, I'm sure that definitely does make a big difference.
Yes. But I also think that's the beauty of our jobs in sports. Like every day is so different. You know, some days you're, you know, in a normal world, you're like downtown meeting with clients or sponsors, or some days you're at the arena, you're at a game. Some days you're just at the training complex and have internal meetings. Like every day really is different. And because the organization is so small and we are so collaborative, you know, cross-functionally across departments, you could be spending a whole day talking about tickets, or one day talking about social media, one day doing sponsorships. It's like one day, like popping over to practice. I mean, it's the diversity of every day, I think, is what makes it really fun and keeps it really interesting.
That's awesome. This has been great. Thank you, Katie. Though before
thank
I let
you
go, of course, we have to do five fun facts. So our listeners know this. This is something I started with 49ers players, where I do it with them one-on-one. this season's been on Zoom. Normally it's in person on my iPhone.
Yep, I'm familiar with that. We did a whole media day on Zoom, so I feel your pain.
Yes, there's been a lot of Zoom. Actually, the day that we're recording this, I think is my first day without a Zoom media availability since maybe July.
Oh, so that's nice.
So that's kind of a weird feeling. Yeah. I keep feeling like there's something else I have to do. Mm-hmm. But we are going to do five fun facts on this podcast. We ask everybody the same five questions every week, and it's been great because we get five different answers. So without further ado, five fun facts with Katie O'Reilly. All right, Katie, what is your favorite moment in sports?
Favorite moment in sports. Okay, I'm going to cheat and rattle off three really quickly. I would say the first is the 2008 World Series. I grew up in Philly. There's nothing like growing up here, being championship-less your entire diehard sports fan childhood, and then getting that first taste of winning. That was the year the Phillies won the World Series. I was at game four when Joe Blanton, who was the pitcher at the time, hit a home run. I was at the parade. By the way, I was also at the parade when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, which was another special moment that I'll never forget. I was back in the city, but like your first championship as a fan is amazing. I would say the second is, and you will love this, 2003, I guess it was, Michigan versus Ohio State. We beat Ohio State to clinch a spot in the Rose Bowl. That was my freshman year. You get it. There's not, like, to me, there's something really special about your fandom in the city you're from. There's something that's really different and really special, your college fandom. That was amazing. My little brother was actually visiting me and like stormed the field and I was terrified and thought I lost him. So anyway, that was really fun.
Amazing.
Awesome. That's a whole other story. Maybe we'll take up a whole other podcast. and then I would say my third favorite would be the 2018 NBA playoffs. That was our first at the 76ers, our first postseason home victory against the Heat. And we had literally spent 5 years working for that moment. And if anyone is listening familiar with the process, you know that we went through a lot of years of not winning many games and not having many fans in the arena. So that first playoff home win, there was like truly nothing like it.
That's amazing. And I love that you've been to all these parades.
Diehard fan, diehard fan at heart.
Absolutely love it. What is your life motto?
My life motto, this is a hard one. I'm going to have to steal from work a little bit and say it's trust the process. Truly. Like it is, everything happens for a reason. Believe in the process, like learn as you go. And hopefully every experience leads you to where you should be.
Go to workout,
spinning and yoga. I'm going to do two.
Go to coffee order.
Oat milk latte.
Oh, I love an oat.
Already had like three today. It's kind of not great, but they're delicious.
I think I'll maybe make one when we're done here because that sounds amazing. And a book every woman should read.
I wouldn't say necessarily it's specific to women because there are so many books that are must reads for everybody that I share with my team. I would say a couple. One, Walter Isaacson, Steve Jobs biography. It's just inspiring. It's something I think like everybody should read. We all know that brand. Truly nothing like it.
What brand is that?
Yeah, exactly. Right. There's another book, Steal Like an Artist. It's called, by Austin Kleon. This was actually given to me by my director of content, a guy named Sean Spencer at the 76ers. And it's something that I've actually gone back to many, many times, especially during the pandemic, just about innovation and creativity. I'll also just say lastly, like I'm currently reading Barack Obama's memoir. I'm reading A Promised Land. I think I cried on the second page in the preface. So like, it's amazing and inspiring in its own way. And I'll probably add seven more books next week when I hopefully read more. It's another one of my New Year's resolutions to get back into reading. But I think you can find stuff that's inspiring from all different industries and apply it to what you're doing.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Katie.
This was fantastic.
Absolutely. You guys, if you like what you heard, and I know you did, please make sure to leave us a 5-star review and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Fangirl Sports Network. I'll talk to everybody next week. Bye, y'all.
sports opinions with a side of satire.
We're the First and Tens, a weekly show delivering the spiciest opinions on football, life, and especially each other.
And we can do that because we've been best friends for so long. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jasmine. First and Tens will bring you sports from the female perspective while also injecting pop culture, fashion, and music into our daring dialogue.
We're saucy, edgy, and most of all,
we think we're funny AF.
First and Tens, light on stats,
heavy on sass. Follow us at firstandtenspodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.